I'm Doug Wells. My guest co-host this morning is John Wells. Larry Warren is on a business trip down in Las Vegas, so we'll look forward to Larry coming back next week. Those of you that know me will not be surprised to hear that I am really quite excited and delighted to have our first guest today. Our first guest is Yukari Kane. She is the author of Haunted Empire, Apple After Steve Jobs. And Yukari is a former Wall Street Journal reporter who covered Apple for several years. In fact, she broke the story on the iPad. She also broke the story on Steve Jobs' liver cancer. And she wrote, you may have read the Steve Jobs obituary in the Wall Street Journal. She also was the author of that. And she's written a book that, frankly, is very controversial, particularly in the Bay Area. And she has the courage to ask the question, can Apple still innovate? So it's going to be a fascinating conversation. Stay with us.
And good morning, Doug. I'm John Wells. Our second guest this morning, Mark Baker, an HSA specialist for United Health One. HSA is an acronym for Health Savings Account. And we'll talk with Mark about the advantages of an HSA, and how it exists in the land of the Affordable Care Act. And finally, our third guest this morning will be Eric May, who was the executive chef of the Blue Boar Inn, named after the tavern that the Merry Adventures of Robin Hood. He is now the general manager of the Blue Boar Inn, and he will be with us as our third guest. You are listening to Mountain Money, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Our first guest is Yukari Kane. She is the author of the book Haunted Empire, Apple After Steve Jobs. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, it is really a book questioning whether Apple can still innovate. Yukari, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So, as I mentioned, I'm a huge Apple fan. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And what I wanted to start with is, you know, Apple's promise has always been to give us and to produce insanely great products. And I think part of Steve Jobs' magic was he was famous for saying he stood at the crossroads of technology and liberal arts. And can Tim Cook follow in his footsteps?
Yeah, I mean that's the exactly the question that I asked as well. And when I first started writing the book, I thought that if anybody could keep Apple's momentum going or keep the momentum going and without missing a beat, it would be Apple. And I watched over the course of 2 years, I wasn't so sure.
And, you know, I think that's one part of the power of your book. I know when it came out, Tim Cook made a comment on it. We'll get to that comment later. But your reply back to Cook was, you were surprised by your conclusions as well. And I think that's a sign of good reporting, right? You didn't go in with a premise. In fact, you went in with the opposite premise, thinking you were going to show how strong Apple is. Why do you think... why do you think they're struggling, or maybe struggling, in your view, to continue the innovation?
You know, I think there are two things that are happening. One is that Apple just had a tremendous period of growth, and it essentially went from an underdog status to the dominant company in a really short period of time. And so there are lots of challenges that come with turning into a big company, And those are all things that Steve Jobs would have faced as well. And so on top of that, they lost Steve Jobs. And I think what has been really damaging and challenging for Apple is that Steve had this power of persuasion that nobody had. and that worked for Apple, both inside the company and outside of the company. And without it, Apple's been just less convincing.
Yes, and I would agree with you about that power of persuasion. So when you watch Cook in action, he can be a little bit dry, and of course he's a numbers cruncher. He's a manager. He is not Steve Jobs, and some people say that he's a little bit arrogant when he's talking about some of these new products relative to the competition. But Apple's always had that arrogance. The difference is that Jobs was a demigod who could sell his way out of it, and Tim possibly may not be able to do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the interesting things about Steve and Tim that I noticed as I was reporting the book was I think one of the things that people take as arrogance from Tim Cook is actually reservation. He's a very private person. I probably did the deepest dive anybody has ever done on Tim Cook. I went to his hometown of Robertsdale, Alabama. I did a lot of digging, and I still didn't feel like I knew the man. People who worked with him closely like him as a colleague, but they don't feel like they know him. And Steve was all emotion, and so people could connect with that. And I think when Tim Cook tries to give the same message without that connection, it just doesn't ring true.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the points that you make in your book that gives us hope is just a reminder that, you know, Steve Jobs had his choice of who was going to be his successor CEO. He knew that, you know, he knew his days were numbered, and he chose who he wanted to groom and who he would recommend to the board to take over. And there were a number of very qualified people that possibly could have done that. Scott Forstall, as you mentioned in your book, was widely considered to be a contender, as well as Johnny Ives, that has a lot of the characteristics that we mentioned, the charisma. He has been on the air. Why do you think Steve Jobs chose Tim Cook to be his successor, knowing that he was an intensely private man, knowing both his strengths and his weaknesses?
You know, I did a lot of thinking about that, and I think that part of the reason is because Tim Cook is a good manager, and Steve knew that he would keep the business going. I've talked to a lot of people, though, who feel like Steve chose Tim because he knew that Tim would never outshine him, and that he would have never wanted anybody. I mean, he never had wanted anybody to outshine him when he was alive.
Even in death, you think Jobs was worried about that?
I think people have said to me that Steve wouldn't have considered his legacy to be complete until Apple was seen to be shining a little less brightly. And that's a pretty compelling argument for me because he exhibited those traits when he was alive. You know, when he was first diagnosed with cancer, there's an episode that somebody told me where when it was announced to the public, the stock only fell by 1 or 2%. And Steve's reaction was disappointment. He said, "That's it."
Well, Yukari, that's interesting. And of course, Steve always had trouble sharing the spotlight, and he always had to take credit. I don't want to minimize anything about Jobs' influence. I mean, I'm a huge Apple fan and a huge Jobs fan as well, so I don't want to minimize any of what he did. But if the question on the if one of the questions on the table is, can Apple survive the loss of Jobs? Well, if he was always grabbing the spotlight and taking credit, like Johnny Ives, how many people did Jobs suppress and keep back? So just to turn the question around, can Apple possibly do better with some of these new leaders now that they can grab the limelight?
Well, definitely Apple, Steve did take credit. And you know that because he has a lot of several senior managers have left over time. John Rubenstein, who was part of, who managed the whole iPod success and the initial ramp up of the iMac, et cetera, he left. Steve has also lost his longtime software chief, Avi Tavanian. But I think the issue is that, I mean, Steve was still, whatever you think about his contributions, Steve was still the final decider. He was the last guy to make the decision. And there was something in his madness genius that ended up well for Apple. And now you've got all these people who were definitely part of Apple's early successes and continued successes. But for me, I just wonder who's the guy who's making the final decision there now? And can somebody who's the hired manager, whether it's Tim or Johnny or anybody else, make that definitive decision in such a way that all of the troops at Apple are going to follow? Because part of Apple's magic, I think, is that Steve would say that we're going to do this, and everybody followed, and everybody broke their backs towards that goal, whether they knew about it or not. But, you know, some of them on faith alone. And who is that person that commands that kind of leadership?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. You mentioned in your book, it's not just Apple's issue, but, you know, any strong company that had a strong founder, they have a degree of authority, and particularly if there's design involved, right? Design by consensus probably doesn't work. You need to have a couple great ideas and polish it and perfect it. You know, one of the things as I think of Apple's team, and you go through, you interviewed many of these people, you know many of these people. You've got Phil Schiller in charge of marketing. You've got Eddie Q in charge of services. Johnny Ives, famously in charge of design. Bob Mansfield in charge of engineering. As we went through the list, one of the things that struck me that before I read your book, I had really never thought of, but there's not a woman's name on that list anywhere. Why do you think that is? And do you think there's good opportunities for women at Apple, particularly in the senior leadership?
You're asking about women?
Yes. Yeah. I was just surprised that I was really hoping that there would be senior executive women that I just hadn't heard about, but they were in very high positions and helping to chart the course of Apple. And as I learned more about the full team, I was struck by the fact that there were no women on that list. Why do you think that is?
Silicon Valley is a very male-dominated place, so I think, you know, there's a lot of that, and Apple's not unusual just across the board. You know, for me, it's really interesting because the head of Apple Retail is now a woman, and she's a rare female operations executive, and Apple has had very few of those, and it's been a long time, and we haven't really seen what she's going to do yet, or what she has done, and I'm interested to see how well she does, because how well she does will be an indicator of Apple's openness.
Well, she had a heck of a
different perspective.
She had a heck of a track record at Burberry's as CEO. And really did a lot to bring products and to bring the online experience, and of course the company stores and the Apple stores are pretty important to Apple. So it will be interesting to see how she does.
Yes. She is an executive that's already established a reputation. Apple is a pretty closed culture. People who have joined Apple in a senior level have told me that they have to prove themselves. It's not an automatic acceptance. And so it'll be interesting, definitely.
Yeah, in fact, I was excited to see in her background, she also helped develop a watch for Burberry. So, which brings me to my next question.
Oh,
is
wearables.
Yeah, wearables. It has been 4 years, almost to the day, since the iPad was introduced to us, I think was in April, 4 years ago, that the iPad was introduced. And how, you know, what is that cycle of innovation? Should we be expecting a great new product that delights us and is insanely great every 3 to 4 years, or is that cycle more like 7 to 10 years?
Well, Apple so far has been doing it every 3 or 4 years, and I think that is the cycle. You know, Apple's products are always closed, and one of the dynamics that we've seen over and over again is that they come out with something great, and everybody starts copying them or trying to come out with similar products that compete against them. That inevitably chips away at their market share, but then they move on to the next thing that nobody's has a product in, and so part of the success of their business depends on continuing to be able to jump into another product, and so we are due for one. I think one of Apple's challenges is that its business has grown so big at this point that in whatever it comes out with, it's going to have to be a bigger success than it's ever been, because to make a dent or make a significant contribution to Apple's revenues.
In fact, Cook came out earlier this year and said, I think it was a Wall Street Journal interview with him, and he did say multiple new categories this year. And then he kind of hedged his bet a little bit at the end, and he said, well, what most reasonable people would consider to be new categories. So if it's slapping a Retina screen on a MacBook Air, that's not new product categories.
No.
But I do think this is a really important year for Apple. This is the year they have to introduce something that is a new category, and hopefully it's insanely great, but at least show that they're trying and they have new innovation coming out.
Yeah, and part of that is, you know, the questions I have is, what is it going to look like? Apple's products have always been about the details, and what are the details are going to be looking like financially? Apple's always enjoyed 30% to 40% profit margins, and so anything that is too much of a low profit will put a dent on their financials as well, and so they've got all these factors, all these check boxes that they need to cross out and to satisfy everybody, and it's a really tall order.
Yukari, you know what I'm curious about, and this first started under Steve's watch, and you know, I'm really, you know, I keep waiting for something to happen. But 4 or 5 years ago, Apple stood alone with Apple TV. It was a breakaway beginning for the entertainment experience. And everyone kept waiting for them to add to that, and it didn't happen. Samsung, of course, has jumped out ahead. Jeff Bezos and Amazon have just released a streaming device and a streaming product. People keep waiting for the next series of products to complement, which is really outdated now, Apple TV. What do you think is going on with that particular product line?
I think that they keep exploring it. They're experimenting with it. Part of the challenge is probably having to decide whether they're going to actually do a television. When I was in Taiwan and China, I was getting a lot of indication that they were definitely working on something. I think a television is actually a huge challenge. I used to cover the business, and this is an industry that is striving, you know, for 5% margins on a good day. And so there's a lot of challenges there. I think Steve, I talked to a couple people who got hints from Steve that they were working on a television. And then I also heard that Steve has also said that there won't be any television. So, you know, which side of that does Apple actually take? I don't know. And then we've got everybody else who's also competing for this space. Netflix, Google, Amazon. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Facebook eventually gets there, and all these companies are being led by disruptors. And so they're formidable competition as well. I don't envy Apple.
Yukari, I want to make sure we leave time for a question on the personal impact on this book. I saw an interview with you recently at the Churchill Club, which is a great site for really interesting interviews for listeners out there. It's in the Bay Area. It's kind of the thought leaders in the Bay Area, and one of their premises is great people thinking great thoughts. And if you ever get a chance to watch a panel interview there, it's typically well worth your time. And you were on it recently with several other authors of books about Apple. And I want to get back to the personal impact, because in some ways it took a lot of courage, right, to come up with the premise and say, you know, actually I am worried about Apple's ability to innovate. This is the Bay Area people. It's a company that people love, most of us. And one of the other panelists was took kind of a jab at you and said that the rumor of Apple's death has been greatly exaggerated. What has been the impact on you? You live in the Bay Area, I assume, with your neighbors and friends and in the community that you've lived in, after coming out with a book that's as controversial as your book is?
You know, there hasn't been. I mean, online I've been getting a lot of strong opinions, obviously. But, you know, that's as expected. When I was writing about Apple for the Journal, there was a lot of that as well. And I think it just shows how strongly people feel about Apple. You know, for me, this was an exploratory book, and there, it's a book of observations. You know, I'm actually an Apple user. I wrote my book on a Mac Air, and I own an iPhone and iPad as well. So, you know, I'm not. It wasn't something that I thought of. I guess I was so focused on just writing something that was true to what I saw. And one of the reasons why I had nearly 200 sources contributing to the book is because I did want to make sure that I wasn't just getting a biased assessment. You know, sometimes it took a couple dozen people for me to be persuaded about something about Tim Cook or some of the other executives or about what's going on at Apple today.
Yukari, I wanted to ask you about a possible cultural change at Apple. I was in technology business in Silicon Valley for 25 years, and we would, with four different companies, and we would sit down with our customers under nondisclosure, and we would tell them about our future intentions so they could plan with us. Apple, of course, is more into the surprise thing, where they're a little bit more, you know, a little bit more secret. But now you have companies like Google, who are not only talking about their future intentions under nondisclosure, but they're talking about where they are going with their products, and they're telling the whole world. Culturally, Apple's obviously under pressure to change this, but do you believe that they will in fact change and start being less secretive?
I think they already have. You know, the number of interviews that Tim Cook and his executive team has given over the last couple of years is astonishing, not to mention all the secrets that are coming out in the Apple-Samsung trials in the patent battles. There's so much out there that we know about Apple that we didn't before. And also the news that we're getting more from Taiwan and China every day. You know, I went to Taiwan myself, which is where Foxconn is headquartered, and I was astonished at how much people knew about Apple's explorations and products over there. And I said, you know, I commented to a couple of my sources that this is really incredible that everybody seems to know what Apple is looking at. And they said, well, you know, I mean, you've got a million, you know, hundreds of thousands of, at least, factory workers, and they're not paid enough to keep the secrets.
Yeah, it's a real issue, and I think it's why we're starting to see a lot more of these, you know, iPhone, as you mentioned, iPhone photos come out ahead of time. It's because the supply chain is so immense And they have to produce so many of these products because we all want them on day one or as soon as possible. And, you know, somebody that, some guy in China that's making the equivalent of $5,000 US, if he can pick up $1,000 by snapping a quick photo, it's amazing we're not deluged with more of these.
Right. And they're all on the internet.
So, Yukari, we thank you very much for your time this morning. As you can tell from both John and I, we're big Apple fans. We both really enjoyed your book. Our guest this morning is Yukari Kane. She is the author of Haunted Empire, Apple After Steve Jobs. Yukari, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And stay tuned with us on Mound Money. Our next guest is going to be Mark Baker, and he's going to talk to us about a tax-saving tip that you can still take advantage of before April 15th, which is the health savings account. You're listening to Mound Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo's been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
This is Craig McCarthy with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with lots of benefits, from business-to-business networking and promotional opportunities to access to our 1,000-plus membership database. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
And welcome back to Mount Money. I'm John Wells. I'm pinch hitting for Larry Warren this morning, and I'm here with Doug Wells. Mark Baker, health savings account specialist for United Health One. As consumers across the country navigate tax season and a changing health care landscape this year, the savings and control over health care spending offered by health savings accounts, also known as HSAs, deserves a closer look. The Affordable Care Act has changed a few aspects of HSAs. However, their triple tax advantages still remain. Mark, welcome to Mountain Money.
Hey, John. Hey, Doug. Good to be with you.
Yeah. Can you start by telling us what an HSA is and why an individual or a family would want one?
Well, it's tax time, not too far away here, so we love to talk about HSAs and HSA Center when it's tax time. And basically, a health savings account has two parts. You buy a qualified, what's called a qualified high-deductible health insurance plan, and this is all under the federal law that passed a little over 10 years ago. And with that health plan, you get a special tax-advantaged savings account. And this is unique in the health insurance world, but why would somebody want it? Well, you get lower cost health insurance when compared with traditional or copay plan, and you get some great tax advantages. We like to say triple tax advantages. So you get some high quality health insurance, some great tax advantages, and HSAs are perfect for people who work for themselves and for folks who work for companies that may not provide them health insurance today.
Well, but I do want to, first off, I really like your website. It's not a commercial for your company. It's a great resource of information. I'll go ahead and give it a quick plug, and we'll do it at the end of the show as well. And the website's www.hsacenter.com. Lots of great information. I do want to caution folks, though. It's perfect for some people. It's not perfect for others. The big risk there is the high deductible plan. So if you have kids, if you're in a situation where you're likely to need your health insurance, somebody's got a medical condition and you're likely to pay up to that limit every year, then an HSA is probably not for you. Would you agree with that?
I think that's true. I think clearly you got to have the wherewithal to make the deduction, I mean, make the contributions into the savings account to make it really work for you. But if you can do that, then the tax advantages are great. And you can even use that money in that account to pay that deductible. So HSAs are great, but certainly in certain circumstances, they wouldn't work as well.
Yeah, let me give it an illustration for folks, because I think the people that it makes the most sense to is healthy people that usually don't use health insurance that much. And then people that are kind of in between using it a lot and using it a little. So, for instance, my company has an HSA, and I'm a participant in it. So I think I went from a $2,000 deductible up to a $6,000 deductible for my family. And my company saved a little bit of money, as you point out, Mark, because the health insurance premiums were reduced because the deductible was so much higher. So they gave me some of the money that they saved.
Right.
And if you're the type of person that doesn't use it much, you can start saving up that company contribution as well as what you put in personally and let that account grow. Those tend to be the folks that can really benefit the most is people that are occasional visitors. You got strep throat, you get the flu, you got to go to the doctor. If you've got a liver disease and you know you're going to go to the doctor on a regular basis, probably tough to make it pencil out.
Well, maybe so, but I would just I would push back gently just a little bit that the whole world is moving toward high deductibles, and even under the ACA plan, the Affordable Care Act. So I think to be able to save that money to cover that deductible is very important. So I wouldn't discount them maybe quite that much, but for most people, I think they work quite well. For some, not so much. But remember, high deductibles are here to stay with the cost of health care.
That's a good point. Fair enough.
And I believe, Mark, that outside of the medical business, that high deductibles are here to stay. It appears that everyone is structuring, and I'm talking about home insurance and auto insurance,
oh, yes.
The high deductible that we will cover you in the catastrophic, we will cover you when you total your car. But if you bump it up, well, you're on your own. So it appears that all insurance is moving that way.
I think we're all being asked to take more responsibility, you know, in this way to keep premiums lower. And I think it makes sense in the health arena, especially with HSAs, because who's the user of health care? Well, it's us, the consumer, not the boss or somebody else who's paying most of the premium. And with an HSA, you get control of those dollars because dollars that you contribute come off your gross income, you get a tax deduction like an individual retirement account. Those dollars sit in there and grow tax deferred. And then you can take them out tax free as long as you're using them for qualified medical expenses. And that's virtually anything the IRS says it is. Could be acupuncture, could be maybe dental or vision, LASIK, eye care. If you don't have a health plan that covers eye care, and again, you can use those dollars that you save to cover the deductible that we keep talking about, that so many of us, that we keep seeing those deductibles go up and up and up. And here's a way to cover that deductible, get a tax break, and make the whole package of health insurance more affordable for your family.
Yeah, Mark, it's one of the few vehicles that I know of that benefit, as you coined the phrase, the triple benefits. But usually you either get the tax deduction on the back end or on the front end. You don't get it in both. In other words, as you put money in, as you point out in the HSA, you get the tax deduction for that. You're not paying tax on that income. And if you pull it out for qualified expenses, you're not paying the taxes on it then. A traditional IRA, that's how that works. A traditional IRA, you get the tax deduction or you don't pay income tax on the money that you contribute into the IRA. But when you pull it out, it's all going to be taxed as ordinary income. In the HSA's case, as long as you save your receipts, and this is the point I want to make, is it's really important along the way to save your receipts. So if you need to pull $1,000 out or $2,000 out, if you're using it to kind of save and grow, save those receipts because you'll need them to prove it was a qualified expense. Mark, is there any expiration date? Let's say somebody had a medical, so they've got an HSA today, 10 years go by, and you say, you know, that $1,000 expense that I paid out of pocket instead of using my HSA, is there any expiration on how recent those medical expenses had to be?
No. I mean, if you have an HSA, the money you put in is yours. Again, it's not the insurance company, it's not the banks. It's your money. So, say you build up some savings, and your life situation changes. You get a new job where an HSA isn't available, or whatever the situation is. That money's there. You can use it in the future for qualified medical expenses, tax free. And if you start up and have a qualified high deductible plan again, you can continue to contributing to an HSA. But no, there's no expiration date. There's no it rolls over year after year, if you want to talk about it that way. Unlike a flexible spending account, it's your money. And even in retirement, after age 65, we should also tell people this, that you can use the dollars in the IRA, in your HSA, you can continue to use them tax-free for medical care, qualified medical care, or you can use them for normal living expenses like an IRA, but you're going to pay normal income taxes with it.
Yeah. Mark, when we talk about programs like this, I'm always curious how our home state of Utah does as far as participating, and I took a peek at it last night on the web, and apparently there's 13.5 million people in the country, which represents about almost 8% of the United States that has HSAs, and the state of Utah is up about 11.5%, so is above that mean. And Hawaii has 0.3% participation. I don't know why, but Alabama and Mississippi are number two and number three at about 1%. It has doubled probably over the last 4 years. Do you expect this growth to continue?
I think so. I mean, we've seen about 22% of our customers during open enrollment select a health savings account. And I think absolutely it's going to continue to grow, and I think it's what we talked about earlier. As the cost of medical care continues to rise, insurance premiums are going to continue to go up. Employers and individuals are going to look for solutions for more affordable health insurance, because no one should go without health care. It's too risky today. So an HSA just makes a lot of sense in terms of affordability. You get the lower cost, higher deductible insurance, and then you have this ability to put savings away, take the tax break, use it tax-free for qualified medical care. That makes your money go even further, and the dollars grow tax-deferred. So absolutely, we've seen HSAs just grow and grow, and there's no reason to expect otherwise. I think they're just such a unique product. They work so well for any number of people in any number of situations that we absolutely expect them to continue to increase in their numbers. They just make sense economically, I think. If we become consumers of healthcare, more like consumers of healthcare, really take charge, and we know people who've shopped around for the best cost on certain procedures, I think that just makes sense in this environment. The folks absolutely using the care, asking those questions, that's the only way we're ever going to see healthcare, the cost of healthcare, decline.
I think you're right. We do need people being better consumers. One last disclaimer, you definitely want to talk to your accountant about this before you do it.
Good advice.
Mark, unfortunately, we've got to wrap up at this point. Our guest is Mark Baker. He is a health savings account specialist at United Health One. Their website, which is very good, is www.hsacenter.com. Mark, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Good luck with tax time, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Bye-bye.
We'll return after these messages. You're listening to Mountain Money.
This is Sean Railton. I'm an agent with Park City Realty Group. I'm a 30-year Park City resident and a KPCW underwriter. I have been involved in the Park City real estate market since 1994 as an agent, an appraiser, and an investor. I can be reached at 649-1991 or Sean at ParkCityRealtyGroup.com.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This Green Earth asks, 55 degrees in February?
TV as population control?
Clean air in the Salt Lake Valley?
Are these questions on your mind, too?
All of this and more explained on This Green Earth.
Tune in Tuesdays at 9 a.m.
Brought to you by
Republic Services,
Vail Resorts,
Habitat for Humanities Restore,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm John Wells. I am pinch hitting for Larry Warren, who is off today. And I'm here with, of course, Doug Wells. Our next guest, Eric May, was the executive chef at the Blue Boar Inn and is now the general manager. I mentioned this earlier. I got a kick out of this. The Blue Boar Inn is named after the tavern in the Merry Adventures of Robin Hood. I think that's pretty cool.
It is. It is. And I am actually also the executive chef still.
Okay.
To this day. And
yeah. I have to ask you before we really get started, and that's on your webpage, you have a list of activities that guests who stay at your inn can do. And it includes golf and skiing and hiking and all of the activities that we all enjoy here. But the last activity that you had down there at the bottom was cloud gazing. And I said, you know, we don't do enough cloud gazing around here, do we?
I have to say, I've never heard that phrase before, cloud gazing. Stargazing I've heard of.
Well, you know, you're sitting on a lift and you look at this cloud and you say, geez, looks like a dog, and then it morphs into something else. And, I mean, I look at clouds every once in a while, but I really got a kick out of that.
No, we have a nice upper deck that's good for that, and our back patio. You just go back there and you just kind of relax, lean back in the chair and forget about everything.
So, you know, before I moved to Utah, it was one of our favorite places to go on vacation, my wife and I. This was before we even had kids. One of the places we went to, this has got to be 15 years ago, was the Blue Boar Inn. Had a great time. Always enjoy coming out here. How has the Blue Boar Inn changed over the last 10 to 12 years?
You know, I don't necessarily know if we've actually changed. We've done enhancements to make your experience better. And, you know, we just want to keep it that old world feel. So when you walk in, it's almost as if you walk back in time. You know, it's not the hustle and bustle of bigger resorts. It's just more intimate and relaxed.
It's the same but better.
That's what I like to say, yes.
That's great. You know, we had Bob Wheaton in here, who's the president of Deer Valley. Oh, well, not on Mountain Money, but in here at KPCW. I think it was Leslie Thatcher that interviewed him. And he was talking about the big plans that Deer Valley and a couple other private groups have for that land that faces Highway 40, which is really close to you guys. What is that something you guys are looking forward to? What impact do you think that'll have on your business?
You know, I definitely look forward to it. I know they're in the process of building a mountain bike trail that connects Deer Valley and the Midway Heber Valley. So, I mean, anything to get more people over to our valley is an asset to us.
And they're putting in a new lift. I think that's certainly on the schedule. I don't know, maybe the next several years, but that's going to really help Midway and Heber's folks. Can certainly go and grab the gondola, but they can take this new lift and get right up to the top without having to ski back down to Snow Park.
And everything like that helps our valley, because a lot of people don't even realize that we're over there. So it's nice to get anything to draw more people into our valley.
But I think during the expensive season here, during ski season, during Sundance, the rates that you'd pay over in Heber Valley is quite a bit less than what you would pay certainly down here in the heart of Park City. And now with the gondola connecting to Deer Valley, I think a lot of tourists like that trade-off. You're a little bit further away, but you might save a little bit on cost.
I agree. We did get a lot of people for Sundance and the winter season that didn't want all the traffic because they could just drive up and take that gondola up.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about your menu. You've got some great things on here, fondue, Swedish meatballs, braised pork cheek, Blue Boar salad, but I didn't see sauerbraten and dumplings. Is there any place in the Midway Heber area that has sauerbraten and dumplings?
You know, I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
Sauerbraten is one of those things that nobody can make it as good as their grandmother.
Yeah.
And so most people don't even attempt.
Yeah.
And
my mother's name was, or her maiden name was Lubeck, so I'm half Irish, half German, and she used to make it from scratch. And that's what I always requested on my birthday. And now that I live here, I know there's a lot of German and Swiss influence over in Midway, but I just haven't found it anywhere.
Yeah. Well, have you been over to the Blue Boar yet? I mean,
I have in the beautiful lobby with the hand carved staircase and that special oven that you have. What's that thing?
The Kochenlofen.
A Kochenlofen.
Exactly.
Is that actually used or is that just
we don't use it? No,
that's just out.
No, it's just a showpiece now.
It's an old wood fired.
Yes.
Okay.
So we're entering the end of the ski season. This weekend is closing weekend for sure for Deer Valley. I don't know about the other resorts. And as soon as summer is going to be here, what are one or two things about the Blue Boar Inn experience during the summer that maybe people have not heard of in the past?
The number one would be the our patio and just, you know, all the golf courses that we have around is just that it's amazing. You know, I mean, we have four or five golf courses within 10 minutes. And that's mainly our summer business is golfers.
Yeah. That's a beautiful location.
And scuba diving. I was just at dinner the other day with some friends. We were seeing the Park City Follies this weekend. We went out to dinner ahead of time. And one of my friends was mentioning scuba diving at the Homestead
crater.
At the crater, which is right down the street from you guys. And three of the other couples that were with us was like, you can scuba dive in Midway, right? They had no idea.
It is actually amazing. It's almost, I think it's a one of a kind because it's in a big anthill looking shell, but it's 60 feet deep.
And the water's warm. It's 90 degrees, so you don't have to freeze.
It's pretty nice.
Are you affiliated with Crater or Homestead or?
We all have working relationships and, you know, it's in my best interest for them to do the best that they can do.
Because I know that they were just mentioned somewhere on your website, and I was wondering if there was some sort of tie in there.
We do help each other out in every way we can, because we are a small valley.
And how big are you guys as far as, like, number of rooms maybe versus maybe the Homestead?
You know, we have 12 rooms, and the Homestead, I think, has over 100.
Yeah.
And Zermatt, the same, over 100.
Right.
So we're one of the small kids on the block.
You're the boutique.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And we do get a lot of business from them. So when they're busy, they send people over, and we send people over to use their facilities and book events.
How large of an event can you have at your facility?
You know, it depends if it's an outdoor or indoor. Yeah. Outdoor, we can do about 100. Indoor, 60 is probably a good number. And we cater to people's specific needs. I don't have like, okay, for this many people, we do this. We tailor everything to what the customer wants.
And if somebody, I know weddings are really popular here during the summer. If somebody's knows somebody that's looking to do a wedding, do you guys still have availability this summer to do that on a weekend, or are you guys pretty much booked?
We do. We do have some availabilities, and you know, hopefully they'll fill up soon.
Good.
You know.
All right. Well, our guest this morning is Eric May. He was recently appointed the general manager. As you reminded us, you're also the executive chef at the Blue Boar Inn. Eric, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to do a quick break, and then we'll be back with more of Mound Money in a minute. Stay tuned.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longrimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Bonita Vanderkoy, State Farm Insurance and Financial Services, 435-657-2220. Park City Communities Foundation's Women's Giving Fund, B1 in 1000. Farisha, 605 Main Street. Women's Wear by Global Designers, 435-649-3123, farishastyle.com. Kelly and Joe Cronley, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mound Money. John, I really enjoyed our first guest, Yukari Kane, and talking about Apple. And I wanted to give us a couple minutes here at the end to kind of just reflect on that and share a couple thoughts. But before I do, I want to make sure that we set aside time to thank our great sponsors. It takes great sponsors in order to put on programming like this. We run a lean organization here at KPCW, and we want to thank the Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, Iron Mound Group, Park City Chamber, Prudential Real Estate, San Francisco Designs, and new starting this month is Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and Madonna. Thank you guys for all your support. But getting back to the Apple story, as you know, and we were talking in the green room ahead of time, I'm a huge Apple fan. And one of the things I like about them is their products are one of the few products that I think make me a better person, as bizarre as that sounds. Just the whole idea of Apple products and the idea of craftsmanship.
Yes.
And having the very best product that you can work in. For instance, I've got my iPad here in the studio. Just seeing the craftsmanship here inspires me in my work to bring my craftsmanship to my job.
Yes, and if you look at the original MacBook, as those two pieces of plastic came together as the injection molding process, there's a little, they call it a spline, but it's a small piece of plastic that originally held it in the mold. And typically, when you put those things together, you really don't worry about the spline because nobody sees it. But Steve Jobs was absolutely clear that that thing had to be sanded down perfectly. There are things that are inside of these iPads and iPhones and MacBooks and the original Mac that we will never see, but they look pretty good on the inside because that's the way he was.
And so why do you do that, right? You do that in part because it's a reflection of who you are, in this case, Steve Jobs. And it also, I think, inspires your team, which is one of Yukari's, I think, main points is, you know, Tim Cook is a great manager. And it's the future is yet to be seen whether he can step up and be a great leader. I personally, when I see him talk, I've seen glimpses of great leadership. And it's little things like this. How do you inspire? Because, boy, Apple's a big company now. And we'll see. I really hope that he can succeed at doing that.
Well, I really appreciated your comments in the green room earlier this morning when you were talking about the fact that Steve saw something in Tim, and he certainly had Johnny Ives, and he had these other people he could have gone
them.
To.
Yeah,
and Johnny
them.
Ives, he had a very special relationship with, not only a business relationship, but a very strong personal relationship. So there was something in Tim Cook that he saw. And so we shall see. And I look forward to it. I'm a big Apple fan as well.
Right. And I think also it's important to remember that Steve Jobs, this is going to sound bizarre when I first say it, but let me play it out, which is Steve Jobs has not always been Steve Jobs.
No.
Right? The Steve Jobs that we knew that victoriously introduced the iPad, held it up high, and I certainly was cheering as I was watching that. That wasn't always the Steve Jobs. And the Tim Cook we know 5 years from now may look very different than the Tim Cook that we see today. I was fortunate enough when I lived in the Bay Area to actually spend an evening with Steve Jobs. Myself and three or four of my friends had dinner at one of my friends' house and spent the evening with him. And this was in 1994. And it was very powerful for me because Steve, at that point, was not this cocky, arrogant, charismatic individual. He still had that. But he had gone through a failure. He had been ousted from Apple.
Mm-hmm.
He had bought Pixar. I think it was called Lucas Animation at the time. A third of the engineers left at Pixar because they didn't want to work for Steve Jobs. And Next, which was his next computer company, was not doing that well. And he was a little down. And it had a profound effect on me to see Steve over the years go from being this guy that he was very entertaining. We had a great time. But I was struck by he was a little down.
Yeah.
And to watch his career and to see him triumph again has been very inspirational to me. And I think Apple's products inspire all of us to be better people.
Absolutely. You know, the one question that I wanted to ask Yukari, but we ran out of time, was she said several times in her book that there's been an exodus of employees from Apple. And I just wanted to kind of tease that out a little bit to find out what the numbers were and what was actually going on. She also talked about morale being down. But it's only been a couple of years, and they will get their rhythm.
And, you know, that would be a tough position. Not only are you taking over for the founder, but the founder's not there to help with the transition. He's kind of on his own. And he had such a big personality. I think he's doing well, but I do think this is a critical year. They really do need to come out with a new category that we all look at and say, wow, this is great. And I think we all breathe a sigh of relief then that Apple Computers is here and is going to continue to thrive.
Right, yeah.
Well, I want to also be sure to thank Beth Fracken, our producer for the show. That's Yukari's book. I found out about it about a month ago. It only went on sale 2 or 3 weeks ago. And when it first came out, I sent Beth an email. And I said, boy, it'd be great to get Yukari as a guest. She's been on CNBC. She's been interviewed by the New York Times, a bunch of major organizations. And to have her as a guest at our little radio station here in Park City is quite a coup. So, Beth, thank you very much for doing that. Well, you've been listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We also want to thank our other guests, Mark Baker with Health Savings, who's a health savings account specialist, and then Eric May, general manager at the Blue Boar Inn. We look forward to visiting with you next week on Mountain Money.